Hello, and welcome to our program, Prevention, brought to you by OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Toni Morrell, and during the next half hour, I will be reading articles from the May 2022 issue of Prevention Magazine here on OWL Radio. Prevention, Health, Meet Your Hands by Lisa Mulcahy. Get a grip on how your hands work and how to keep them healthy so they can write, play, text, and touch for life. 1. Cool connections. About a quarter of the bones in your body are in your hands. That's 27 apiece, connected by ligaments, tendons, and joints, which allow you to flex and grasp. You also have over 30 muscles in each hand, some starting at your elbow and running along your forearm to your fingertips. These muscles fit into the bones of your digits to make them move like puppets on a string. There are also tiny muscles in one hand and fingers that let you spread, bend, extend, and stretch your digits. Your hands use two kinds of grip, power grip, in which your palm, long flexor tendons, fingers, and thumb work in tandem to carry, say, a heavy grocery bag. And precision grip. Picture your thumb and index finger acting like tweezers, as when holding a pen or a pencil. 2. Put pain on pause. Hands hurt when you twist open that jar of tomato sauce? You might be dealing with arthritis, an inflammation of the joints that can cause pain and swelling and that strikes women more often than men. Osteoarthritis, known as OA, is the most common type, and repetitive gripping or pinching can contribute to its development. OA most often affects the tips of your fingers and the base of your thumb, says Jamie Nguyen, an occupational therapist who specializes in hands and upper extremity rehab at the New York University Langone Orthopedic Center in New York City. Consult a hand surgeon or an orthopedist for pain-relieving options. An over-the-counter brace or a custom orthosis created by a therapist can be extremely helpful in alleviating pain symptoms, especially if the OA affects the base of your thumb, says Nguyen. 3. Soothe and protect. Constant texting can hurt your hands. Take breaks from your smartphones. Use a pop socket, a plastic circle that attaches to the back of your phone for a more comfy hold, and stretch your wrists and forearms while gently moving your thumbs. Also, don't forget that your hands are almost always exposed to the sun while you're out, so put sunscreen on the top of them as well as on your fingers. Here's a tip. After applying it elsewhere, rub any extra into your hands rather than wiping it off. Use a water-resistant sunscreen with an SPF 30 or higher and broad-spectrum protection daily, and wear fingerless gloves during gel nail treatments. UV light can also damage skin. My diagnosis. Why did I look pregnant every time I ate? By Christina Hauser, as told to Marissa Cohen. This mom knew the pain and bloating weren't just in her head. Now she's helping others eat and feel better. In 2013, soon after I had my third baby, I started to experience strange things with my body. When I would eat, I would get this terrible pain that would move from one side of my abdomen to the other. I developed unexplained rashes and brain fog, too. But the worst thing was the extreme bloating. I had never experienced anything like it before. I would start eating a meal, looking like my normal self, and then by the end, I would have to unbutton my pants because it looked as if I was 8 months pregnant. Over the next 2 years, I saw several doctors in New York, and they couldn't find anything wrong with me. They assumed I had postpartum depression and suggested I see a therapist. I started to think that maybe they were right, and it was all in my head. But something inside me knew that it wasn't. A friend recommended that I see Frank Lipman, M.D., who practices a mix of Eastern and Western medicine. He listened to me describe my symptoms, looked at my eyes and tongue, and within minutes said, "I'll bet anything you have S-I-B-O. It was astonishing. I had been looking for an answer for 2 years, and he figured it out in 5 minutes. The clue in my breath. I soon learned that S-I-B-O, or SIBO, stands for Small Intestinal Bacterial Overgrowth. It's a condition that can cause all the symptoms I was experiencing. I went back to my general practitioner and told him about it, and he gave me a breath test to do at home. I had to eat a very neutral diet for 24 hours, then breathe into a tube every 15 minutes for about an hour and mail the tubes to a lab to see if there was excess hydrogen or methane in my breath created by bacteria in my gut. Dr. Lipman's instinct was right. The tests came back positive for SIBO. My general practitioner told me that the best doctors treating this condition were Mark Pimentel, M.D., and Ali Rize, M.D., at Cedars-Sinai in Los Angeles. And by chance, I was doing some work in L.A., so I went to see them. After confirming that I had SIBO by doing a second breath test, the doctors recommended a course of antibiotics. Now, I know that antibiotics are a standard treatment for SIBO, but my doctors told me that antibiotics could cause SIBO, and we believe that's how I got it. When I had my third C-section, I developed a dangerous MRSA infection in the hospital and had to take very strong antibiotics. They saved my life, but also probably caused the SIBO. So I asked if there was any other treatment I could opt for. I have 3 kids and I work, and I didn't want to be messing around with this for years. So I said, "What can I do that will just knock this out?" Shakes, diets, and a cookbook. My doctors put me on an elemental liquid diet, which meant that I consumed nothing but horrible tasting shakes for 28 days. It was one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life, but by the time I was done, I'd say 90% of the symptoms were gone. After that, for 2 years, I followed a low fermentation diet, which limits fiber, dairy, and fruit, and allows proteins and easy to digest carbohydrates, such as rice and potatoes. I had a few more flare-ups, and I had to do the elemental diet 2 more times. But now I am completely SIBO-free. The low fermentation diet was so helpful for me, but it was really hard to create meals that would work with the diet and that the rest of my family would enjoy. So I joined up with a nutritionist, Robin Berlin, RDN. We tweaked the low fermentation recipes and combined them with family favorites, and we just published the result. The Good LFE Cookbook. Low Fermentation Eating for SIBO, Gut Health, and Microbiome Balance. I hope it can help other people who are struggling with SIBO feel better while eating food they love. Tell us about your diagnosis. Did you have symptoms that took a while to get properly diagnosed? We'd love to hear your story. Write to letters@prevention.com. That's letters@prevention.com. And by the way, could you have SIBO? SIBO, or small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, occurs when the small intestine, which is usually relatively sterile, gets overrun with bacteria that would normally be swept out. When you eat, some of the food gets digested by the excess bacteria in your small bowel rather than by you, and that creates gas, explains Al Rizay, MD, medical director of the GI Motility Program at Cedars-Sinai in Los Angeles. The bacteria can also gobble up some of the nutrients your body needs, which can eventually lead to malnutrition. SIBO is most commonly triggered by food poisoning, Dr. Rizay explains. It can also be caused by abdominal surgery, prolonged use of antibiotics, or proton pump inhibitors, conditions such as celiac disease or structural problems in the small intestine. Non-absorbable antibiotics are a common treatment for SIBO, though many patients will need maintenance therapy with pro-motility drugs or low-fermentation eating. Most people who are properly treated for SIBO can have a very comfortable life, and many can be completely cured, Dr. Reza says. The main symptoms of SIBO includes bloating, abdominal distension, diarrhea, gas, abdominal pain, and weight loss. Prevention Magazine, May 2022. Problem solved. Achy breaky neck? Tips on taming the ouch by Stephanie Anderson Whitmer. 70% of adults will experience neck pain that interferes with their daily lives. Waking up with a crick can be a real pain in the neck. You may feel soreness in your upper back area or neck when you're still, or a twinge when you're moving. Sleeping in a weird position is a well-known trigger, but an increasingly common cause is something we've all been doing a lot more of lately: staring at digital screens. Tech neck is a muscle strain in the neck and upper back from holding your heads in a forward or downward position as we work long hours on computers or scroll on our phones, says Karen Erickson, DC, FACC, a chiropractor in New York City. The issue usually goes away in about a week. Call your doctor if it lasts longer or gets worse. And there's more good news. You can take actions to feel better or help prevent pain in the first place. Prevent it. Hack your sleep. It's natural to move during the night. Decrease your chances of a neck issue by sleeping on your side or back instead of on your stomach to prevent your neck from hyper-rotating, says Erickson. And here's how to pick a pillow. Any material is fine, but to find your perfect height, be sure your neck isn't at a steep angle or sunken in while you're flat on your back. Adjust your workstation. Wherever you're working, abide by the 90-90 rule for optimal computer posture. Your elbows and knees should be at 90 degrees, with your feet flat on the floor, says Daniel Park, MD, FAAOS, an orthopedic spine surgeon at Beaumont Hospital, Royal Oak in Michigan. If you work on a laptop and have a separate keyboard, place it at elbow height and prop your laptop up so the screen is at eye level. With a laptop, both the keyboard and the screen are low, which isn't good for posture, Erickson adds. Wet your whistle. Adequate hydration is the key to a lot, including a pain-free neck. Muscles spasm more easily when you're dehydrated. Drinking enough fluids helps them relax, says Erickson. Need help remembering to sip? set phone alerts, or download a fun water tracking app like Water Llama. It sends you reminders, calculates your personal H2O needs, gives you wellness challenges, and more. Treat it. Try heat or cold. For the first couple of days, ice the spot for 10 to 20 minutes about every hour, says Dr. Park. Wrap the pack in a towel to protect skin. If it hurts longer than a few days, apply heat on the same schedule. Move more. You may want to hold your neck as still as possible, but light movement is good for you. If you don't use the muscle at all, it can stiffen up, causing more spasms, says Dr. Park. An easy 15-minute walk will do the trick. Look straight ahead and focus on your walking form, arms lightly swinging instead of gazing at your phone or your feet. Hit the drugstore. For most neck pain, an over-the-counter pain reliever such as acetaminophen, ibuprofen, or naproxen can ease the pinch. If OTCs don't provide relief or the crick lasts for more than 2 weeks, call your doctor, who can determine whether something more serious, like an injury or a nerve issue, is causing your pain. Prevention Magazine, May 2022. 3-Day Boost. Make a Move by Ariel Wegg. If you have 10 minutes, you can seriously help your heart. You've taken the stairs and parked your car farther from your destination. So, what's next? Any movement is always good for the body to support cardiovascular health and lower your risk for chronic disease, says Natasha Trinkosta, MD, a sports medicine specialist and an orthopedic surgeon at Cedars-Sinai Carolyn Jobe Institute. She suggests incorporating movements that increase your heart rate as well as strength training exercises to build lean muscle mass. And you can break it up and do 10 minutes at a time, she says. A study recently published in the journal JAMA, Internal Medicine, found that if all Americans ages 40 and older just added 10 minutes of physical activity to each day, Americans ages 40 and older added just 10 minutes of physical activity to each day, over 100,000 deaths could be prevented every year. With 20 or 30 minutes of added daily physical activity, that number drastically increases. And while the CDC says adults should aim for about 150 minutes of physical activity per week, that can mean many types of exercise. Today, lift weight while you wait. Every time you find yourself waiting for something, take it an opportunity to move, says Dean Seda, a NASM certified personal trainer. Break the day down into smaller chunks of minutes when you can squeeze some movement in, he says. For instance, you could do squats while waiting for a Zoom meeting. Camera off till it starts, though. Or do bicep curls during a commercial break. These kinds of fundamental movements help burn calories and build up muscles reuse every day. Fitness expert Jennifer Cohen agrees, adding that she'll place a resistance band around her ankles and do lateral steps while her eggs cook or her coffee brews. Tomorrow, set the scene. Got a yoga mat rolled up in the corner waiting until you're ready to work out? It's not doing you any good over there. Roll it out in a spot where you'll be regularly, so you'll see it every morning as a reminder to get in some activity. And leave it there. When it's visible to you, it's much harder to ignore, Cohen says. As soon as you wake up and see your mat, she suggests taking 5 minutes to stretch or do abdominal exercises. Need a little inspiration? Many virtual fitness programs like Obi Fitness recognize the need for speed and offer on-demand workouts, stretching, and more in just 5 minutes. The day after tomorrow, find your goal. Walking around the neighborhood again may not seem like an exciting prospect, but it's easier when you have a goal in mind. Cohen suggests having a specific destination, like a coffee shop or a friend's house, or even deciding on a landmark you want to reach. Aimlessly walking can become monotonous, but having a destination helps you kill two birds with one stone, she says. Seda adds that you can get the family involved. Next time you need to run an errand, instead of driving solo, grab a family member to walk or bike to the store with you. If a physical destination doesn't work for you, Dr. Trencosta suggests choosing a fitness goal to aim toward, like walking a certain distance each day or training for a 5K. The Chemical Invasion by Merrill Davids Landau. For many people, compounds in the air and in everyday objects can wage an assault on the body. Here's what we know about chemical intolerance, also known as multiple chemical sensitivity, MCS. A decade ago, Corinne Segura of Victoria, Canada, was an active 29-year-old who enjoyed salsa dancing and liked to cycle. But after exposure to mold in her rental home, she began having strange symptoms. Whenever Corinne was around certain very common chemicals, air fresheners, household pesticides, new carpet in a doctor's office, gas station pumps, even essential oil diffusers, she became dizzy, disoriented, and exhausted, and her throat would swell. The symptoms became so debilitating, she eventually had to quit her job as a grant writer and move. Doctors prescribed antihistamines and an asthma inhaler, but the only thing that helped was avoidance. The more I removed chemicals from my space, the simpler it was to tell which products bothered me, Corinne says. After several years of this and taking supplements prescribed by a naturopath, Corinne was greatly improved, but her recovery hasn't been a straight line. When smoke from the California fires of 2020 wafted her way, her sensitivities revved back up. Recently, she says, she was stuck in fumy traffic and had to spend a day recovering in bed. Although Corinne has never been diagnosed, it appears that she suffers from a condition known as multiple chemical sensitivity, MCS. Others call it chemical intolerance, idiopathic environmental intolerance, IEI, or when there is an identifiable initiating exposure, toxicant-induced loss of tolerance, TILT. And the condition is more common than many of us realize. A 2018 survey in the Journal of Occupational and Environmental Medicine found that 26% of Americans said they got symptoms after exposure to our environment's many odorous chemicals. Common complaints include migraines, skin rashes, brain fog, nausea, and even fainting or seizures, according to a survey published in Air Quality, Atmosphere and Health. And the problem seems to be growing, or at least it is better recognized than it once was. Rates of diagnosed chemical intolerance are up 300% from a decade ago. MCS is thought to begin when someone encounters an irritating chemical either in one gulping dose or from smaller but more lasting encounters, like the mold in Corinne's house. Once this happens, certain people can become sensitive to many fragrances. Scientists don't fully understand MCS, and not all physicians even accept that it exists. But a growing number are aiming to better grasp how contact with chemicals at levels considered safe can bother or debilitate so many, says allergist Jonathan Bernstein, MD, a professor of medicine at the University of Cincinnati and editor-in-chief of Journal of Asthma, who sees many patients with the condition. In some ways, chemical intolerance is similar to an allergy. When someone becomes allergic to, say, peanuts, contact with even a tiny amount creates a disproportionate reaction across the body. MCS is not an allergy because it doesn't cause the body to produce antibodies known as immunoglobulin E, IgE, as in an allergic reaction. For this reason, allergists often turn people who complain of these symptoms because they don't know how to help them, Dr. Bernstein says. Smells like trouble. Sensitivities can be initially caused or later triggered by a range of common factors, including fragranced products. This is one of the most common triggers, according to research by Anne Steinman, PhD, a professor of civil engineering at the University of Melbourne in Australia. A single-scented household or personal care product typically gets its smell from dozens of ingredients, most of which need not be listed on the label, any of which might set off a reaction. Office and home materials. These may also be brimming with airborne chemicals. New furniture and flooring are two examples. That new car smell is actually formaldehyde and a soup of other volatile substances, says Gidimus Manius, PhD, a professor of environmental sciences at Rutgers University in New Brunswick, New Jersey. New or renovated buildings create some of the biggest problems. Ironically, when the Environmental Protection Agency redid its headquarters in the late 1980s, several employees developed the condition, says Claudia Miller, MD, professor emeritus in the Department of Family and Community Medicine at the University of Texas Health Science Center at San Antonio. Even green buildings are not exempt because the tightly seals create that are around the doors and windows to improve energy efficiency may trap gases and particles inside and worsen indoor air if ventilation is inadequate, Mirella says. Cigarette smoke. Burning cigarettes emit a wide range of chemicals, including benzene and lead, according to the American Lung Association. We have measured 10 times higher particle mass concentrations inside smokers' homes compared with non-smokers, Manlia says. E-cigarette users are exposed to not only nicotine, they're also exposed to ultrafine particles, volatile organic compounds, and other chemicals. Pesticides and insecticides. Even a single application of indoor pesticides has been known to initiate chemical intolerance, Dr. Miller says, and sufferers can be triggered when it's in houses or hotels where these are sprayed. Often people can't put their finger or exactly which chemicals make them sick, and some don't even have smells that can be triggers. What's more, symptoms such as headaches may be chalked up to stress when they're actually due to a chemical trigger. The quality of chemicals we're all exposed to has increased exponentially over the years, Dr. Bernstein says. Some people are bothered by this more than others, he adds. You've been listening to Prevention on Owl Radio. You can listen to Owl Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.owlradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Tony Morrell saying goodbye from Al Radio.